From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Not one, but two U.S. attorneys, one in Chicago and one in Springfield, are now investigating. Not even Rod Blagojevich had two U.S. attorneys after him at the same time. And as four of our last seven elected governors have came to know, when the Northern District U.S. Attorney gets involved, that means business. Investigations turn into grand juries. Grand juries into indictments. Indictments into convictions. Convictions into prison time. And then the cycle repeats itself. No more.
Well, he's dead wrong, and he knows it. He's engaged in a campaign of smears and character assassinations. I don't think that's the right way to campaign for the office of governor. I think the people of Illinois know me and have known me a long time, and I do the right thing all the time. And I think it's important that I stand up and be accountable if something is not going right in state government. I address that problem right away. I'm responsible. I take action promptly. With respect to him, he has a lot of explaining to do. He's hired people who have defrauded the public.
Governor Pat Quinn, who does the right thing all the time, or does he? And before that, Quinn's Republican challenger, Bruce Rauner, who says Illinois needs a new governor because the Quinn administration, like that of his predecessor, Rod Blagojevich, is under federal investigation. News was made on that this week, and we'll talk about it on State Week. I'm Amanda Vinicky, filling in for Bill Wheelhouse. On the panel for today's show, Charlie Wheeler. He's director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also, Brian Mackey, State House reporter for WUIS, Illinois Public Radio, and Illinois Issues Magazine. With me at the State House, Associated Press State House Bureau Chief Carrie Lester. Now, that clip that you heard from Rauner was from a press conference where he unveiled an ethics blueprint. It's a fairly extensive plan that seeks to do things like prohibit legislators from voting on matters where they have conflicts of interest, to expand recall to members of the General Assembly. It would ban local governments from hiring private lobbyists, and it would expand who's covered by the revolving door policy that limits the private sector jobs certain government employees can take once they leave the state. There's a lot there. So let's try something different for this campaign cycle and all of its mudslinging and get out of the horse race and actually discuss some policy. Charlie Wheeler, does Rauner have a set of ideas that would shed Illinois of corruption once and for all? Give us a review of his plan.
Well, it occurs to me that it's a pretty far-reaching blueprint. How well it would work in practice, I don't know. And like so many of his plans, there's a lot of vagueness here. He talks about conflict of interest for a legislator. What exactly is conflict of interest? Obviously, if I'm a state lawmaker and there's a contract to give my company some kind of a windfall, yeah, that's definitely a conflict. How about if I'm a farmer and there's a bill that in general would improve agriculture? Back, for example, when we changed the way farmland is assessed so that it's not assessed as though it were available to be converted into a suburban housing development, but we assess it based on its agricultural productivity. That saved farmers a lot in property taxes. If I'm a farmer, is it a conflict of interest for me to vote on it? There's a lot of clarification needed there. And in fairness, Pat Quinn and the General Assembly did enact a number of reforms. And historically in Illinois, ethics reforms, changes in campaign finance have always come about when there's some situation that points out very dramatically, to the extent that the public gets engaged and cares, that there have to be changes made. We put through a law that bans pay-to-play, for example. That was after some of the Blagojevich stuff. We've done other things where we've put on campaign finance limitations, although the U.S. Supreme Court has pretty much negated those. So it's never an easy thing to get these changes made. And it's easy for people to talk about them. But I would also note, as a historical note, I do not count Dan Walker as one of the governors who went to prison for the simple reason he went to prison, but it was for stuff he did after he was governor. I mean, we we've got a bad enough record with people who go to jail for what they did in office without counting the people who get in trouble afterwards.
So Illinois has done a lot on the ethics front, and yet following Blagojevich, there was a commission that had a whole bunch of recommendations that were never put into place, some of which appear to be on this plan. Or Pat Quinn says, for example, I got recall, a constitutional amendment that allows voters to take back their governor. But it's really kind of a faux recall, and how very difficult it would be for a governor to be ousted with that mechanism. And Rauner wants to take it further. Recall, for example, of General Assembly and executive offices. He talks about, as you said, conflicts of interest, also getting rid of outside income for legislative leaders. We have, I believe, all but Christine Rodonio, the Senate Republican leader, who do have outside income from a law office. Is this somewhere where, because they are legislators and are part of the entrenched system, that Illinois hasn't made progress in ethical reform that would make a difference?
Well, see, and I don't agree with the notion that you should ban people from having outside economic interests. At the same time, the people who are yapping about, oh, they shouldn't have any job other than being a legislator, a lot of them are the same people who argue, oh, they shouldn't have health care, oh, they shouldn't have pension benefits because it's supposed to be a part-time job. I mean, you can't have it both ways. Years ago, back in the late 60s, early 70s, Illinois embarked upon a program to professionalize the legislature. We began appropriating money to hire professional staff. Under Governor Ogilvie, we moved to an annual budget. We upgraded the quality of the, the assistance to the governor. Ogilvie brought in a lot of young people who kind of re-energized the executive branch, the legislature. There was a commission that looked at the legislature and recommended that pay be increased, that more be made to attract people other than folks who were lawyers and therefore had the ability to schedule themselves so they could be there for the General Assembly. And the General Assembly has become an annual operation. It's not like back 50 years ago when they would come in for 6 months in the odd-numbered year and then go home for the rest of the term.
Yeah, like they still do in Texas and some other states where it really can be more of a citizen legislature. And you're right, Charlie. I had this same conversation with friend of the show, Chris Mooney, who heads the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the U of I, a couple months ago about professionalizing the legislature. And when you don't pay enough, you end up getting people who can afford, like you said, to take time off, people who are in real estate. So you'd end up getting a lot of real estate agents who become lawmakers. You end up getting, like you said, lawyers, people who like that who are professionals. You don't get business owners and shopkeepers, restaurant owners, because you can't walk away from your restaurant for six months out of the year to come down to Springfield. So it does seem to be somewhat of a conflicting message. And right here in this blueprint, it says, while Bruce believes in a citizen legislature, the job of the leaders requires a full-time commitment. Now, I'm not going to say that there have not been, you know, people have certainly raised questions about lawmakers having conflicts with their personal business interests.
Don't have to be disclosed.
Exactly. And a lot of people, I will say, though, have really tried hard to go after Mike Madigan for what his law firm does. And you know, his law firm does have some of the biggest buildings in Chicago, tries to reduce their property taxes. But I've never been really convinced by these efforts that have tried to find, something nefarious.
That there's a lot in state government that is technically legal that is nonetheless ethically offensive? And that's where I think this whole ethics discussion, no matter what laws that you try to pass, whatever is done there, that there are questions. You have legislators who are kind of protecting their own political livelihoods because they're the ones that pass the laws. So you may not find something illegal, but that doesn't make it right.
Well, this really kind of says something about Bruce Rauner and the way he is conducting this campaign. This is not the first blueprint plan we've seen. He had his education blueprint earlier, just within the last month or so. He had a budget blueprint earlier this year. And when reporters look at these things, they're kind of vague. They don't have a lot of details filled in. They don't really say how he'd go about putting these things into law. And when we ask him about that, he kind of laughs off those questions. Kerry, we were talking earlier. You mentioned the Chicago Magazine blogger who had this piece this week who says that this is kind of also how Bruce Rauner has operated in business. He puts out these broad stroke plans that don't really have a lot of detail, says we'll fill those in later. Of course, when you're dealing with the Illinois General Assembly, how you actually get things passed into a law is another matter, and that can really matter. When you put out a plan, you also have to try and get it enacted into law someday.
And how difficult it would be for any of this, just as anything else that Rauner has put out. We are expecting, whatever the outcome of this election, to have a Democratic supermajority or at least Democratic majority General Assembly. And putting some of these in place would be hard.
Well, and it's not just because there'll be a Democratic majority. My guess is if there were a secret vote, a lot of Republicans would also vote against some of these ideas. And I would add a caveat as somebody who's watched this for a long time. You can pass all the laws you want, and if people are bound to be crooked, they will go ahead and do it anyway. And I would also note that all of the public officials, governors on down, who went to jail for stuff they did that was already illegal. And so adding more regulations I don't think is necessarily going to clean things up. What's really needed is a change in attitude, and for us to get away from the notion or get more to the notion of that public service is exactly that, public service. You're there to represent your constituents. You vote your conscience. You weigh the issues. You try and figure out, based on your experience, your contacts, your knowledge, what's the best public policy for the state of Illinois, and then you go ahead and vote that way. That's the ideal, and I don't think that's what happens. I think too often it's, well, I've had this focus group, and they think I should say this, and so I have to be careful and not say anything else. Or, well, I'll waffle on that. I'm not sure how that'll play, so I'll say, well, I'll give you the details later. Or, I know this is the right vote, but I really, I'm afraid that if I vote this way in the next election, I'll get the opposition mailers that will distort my position and make it harder for me to get reelected. And I mean, I've seen that for well, I guess more than 40 years now.
You know, Charlie, something occurred to me this week, if I can cut in, to say when this proposal was dropped, I'm reminded of 10 years ago, Rod Blagojevich came out with a campaign finance reform plan. It was in April of 2005, and this one incident stands out in my memory. One of the reporter who was working with the Sun-Times at the time walked over to a state rep and handed him a summary. It wasn't even legislation. I think it was just a bullet point of these campaign finance reforms that Blagojevich said he wanted. And he handed it to this lawmaker and said, "What do you think of this?" And the lawmaker, without looking at it, just crumpled it up and dropped it. And I think the prevailing view at the time was this is not something that could actually happen, right? No lawmaker is actually going to vote for these changes. And so I wonder I'm glad to see actual, you know, somewhat concrete policy proposals, but are these even realistic, some of these things?
Well, I would argue, I'll go back to something I said earlier. There have been changes in the law. There have been improvements over the years. And as I said before—
improvements in the eye of the beholder, one would say.
Well, no, the absolute improvements. There was a time, for example, when you didn't have to file an economic interest statement. Now you have to. Now, they can be improved and require more information, but there's a time when you didn't have to. And I remember the debate on the floor of the House, and this was back in the early 70s, and a lawmaker getting up and complaining about how he's going to have to be naked in the fishbowl because of this legislation. But they went ahead and passed it, and it was because there was a scandal going on and there was a lot of public scrutiny. And for lawmakers who, yes, they don't want to vote to discommode themselves, but it was a balance. And even though I don't want to have to disclose, politically it's better for me to vote to disclose and hold my nose and do it than it is to vote no and open myself up
because
to that criticism.
Because the campaign brochures that would say, wow, he or she voted against this disclosure would be even worse potentially.
Well, yeah, and that's how all of this stuff has happened. That's how the Gift Ban Act came about. That's how the regulation about not having fundraisers within a certain period of the spring, the end of the spring session, or not having accepting donations on
state
property.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, for example, yes. So since the 70s, things have changed. I think there are a lot of people that would say Illinois still has plenty of ethical issues, whether it be economic interest statements that are fairly lackluster, often get back with really no detail whatsoever. And as we saw this week, in fact, the Chicago Tribune coming out with a report that another subpoena has been issued against Governor Pat Quinn's administration, this time from a federal grand jury out of Chicago. That said, Carrie, do we make anything of this? This seems to be big news in that an administration has gotten another subpoena, or is this basically a repeat?
Well, I think there's a lot of fuzziness surrounding this whole thing, and more questions than answers come up. Certainly, this emphasizes the point that there are not only one but two serious federal investigations going on. But with a subpoena being issued from a federal grand jury in Chicago now, in addition to one being issued previously in Springfield, you wonder how these agencies are working together or separately, and you wonder about the focus. Charlie, given your history watching a number of governors being investigated, what do you think?
In my mind, the fact that the second grand jury is investigating it doesn't strike me as all that big a deal. And the reason I say that is you only need one grand jury to do the indictment. You don't need to have two of them going on at the same time. I'm assuming that they're coordinating their efforts. Otherwise, they're going to step on each other's toes and conceivably goof up a successful prosecution on down the line. So I didn't see that as such a big deal. You've got the U.S. attorney down here who's had an ongoing investigation, and as a matter of fact, the U.S. attorney asked the legislature to kind of butt out so as not to interfere with what's going on down here. You have the state's attorney in Cook County looking at aspects of things that occurred within the city of Chicago and some of the people who received these grants. You have the legislative committee, the Legislative Audit Commission, who is going to have hearings in about a month or so looking into this. So I don't see that, oh my, earth-shaking news, there's been another grand jury convened.
Yeah, it's funny. We're used to hearing the U.S. attorney asking all other agencies to kind of get out of the way. But what happens when two U.S. attorneys both want to look at the same thing? We're beginning to see a bit of a thundercloud developing somewhere around, midway, what is that, Kankakee, maybe halfway between the northern district and the central district.
I have to believe that they're going to coordinate.
You would think so.
Yeah.
I kind of wonder.
And this is all surrounding, by the way, the Neighborhood Recovery Initiative, to be clear, an anti-violence program that came out before Quinn's last run for governor, and there are speculations/accusations that the administration tried to perhaps curry favor in certain neighborhoods, get voters to do that. At least that's Republicans' accusation. As you said, Charlie, legislators have begun looking into this, had to take a break due to these ongoing federal investigations set to come back just before the election, really. So not a big deal maybe that there's a repeat subpoena, except for perhaps politically for Governor Pat Quinn. The tape that we heard at the beginning of the program,
Rauner the opportunity to say, oh, there's two federal grand juries mm-hmm. looking at mm-hmm. Not one, but two, you know.
And I did have to laugh at that, where you heard from Governor Pat Quinn at the beginning there, where he said, the other guy's going to try and smear me. I'm a good guy. He smears me. That's not the way to run a campaign. And then within the same breath, started to throw lob accusations back at Bruce Rauner.
Yeah, Bruce Rauner's candidates, done this, I think, and he's done that. Yeah, exactly.
Right. They're both culpable in that regard.
But it will be interesting to see how this affects the timing of the next meeting of the Legislative Audit Commission. Over the summer, there were two very long days of hearings where, you know, there was a lot of jockeying for position by a number of Republicans on the panel who I think really see some blood in the water regarding Governor Pat Quinn's reelection bid. But with them scheduled to reconvene next month, they did so under the agreement that they would do so if it didn't interrupt the federal investigation. So now that there are two federal subpoenas, could this, you know, potentially postpone that hearing until after the election, and could that be advantageous to Quinn? We'll see, but that's been rolling around in my mind.
Yeah, and that would be a good point because I would argue that there's really not much for the Audit Commission to do. Their role is to review the audits done by the Auditor General, and if there are really egregious problems that require changes in the law, then they propose the legislation. And it's a bipartisan panel, equal numbers of senators and representatives, equal numbers of Republicans and Democrats. We've already made some changes in the contracting legislation that was passed and that Quinn signed, I think, a couple months ago. So I'm not really sure what further purpose the Audit Commission is going to have. Well, other than that, if you're a Republican, this is a great way to try and—
especially before the election.
You know, mm-hmm.
Speaking of some election distractions, while Rauner was trying to get attention on his ethics blueprint, he was asked by a reporter at that press conference if he has taken any sort of active role in reaction to the NFL's response to the Ray Rice football player's attack on his then-fiancé. Rauner is a minority owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Let's hear his response to that question and then what Governor Pat Quinn had to say.
I have not spoken with the Steelers organization at all. Not in many months.
Why would you not want to reach out and find out what's done?
I am working here in Illinois to win an election and transform our government so it's run for the people again. That's 100% my focus.
And I made it a point when I was speaking to point out that the NFL has some work to do here. I really have been disappointed in their putting profits ahead of doing what's right.
Yeah, well, one of the interesting things, obviously, Rauner had a nice softball that kind of came very slowly over the plate at him in this press conference. And what I think a more experienced politician would have done is said, well, it's outrageous. You know, of course the NFL didn't do. I hate violence against women. It's terrible. It's something that the NFL should have suspended this guy, should have, you know, stripped him from the ability to play or something. And what I think we saw there is an example where Rauner has kind of very carefully scripted the campaign he wants to run. And when he is, has a talking point or it's some point that he wants to make that he can tee off on, he does very well and he speaks very naturally and eloquently on those points. And when it's kind of a curveball, he sort of almost gets irritated that he's being asked these questions and then just tries to change the subject to something else.
Right. It's remarkable he wasn't prepared for it, but Carrie, Governor Pat Quinn clearly was.
He was, and I think, you know, we heard rumblings. I'm not suggesting that the reporter who asked the very pointed question, Marianne Ahern of NBC5, was prompted by the Quinn campaign, but you did hear rumblings about, you know, how runners should be asked about this since he is a part owner of the Steelers. And again, like his education reform blueprint and his budget blueprint and all these plans that come out that kind of speak to a pattern of his candidacy, this fell into a pattern as well. It reminded me of the WTTW debate in the spring during the primary campaign where he was up against three other candidates who had decades of political experience. And here he was the much more flashy of the four, but they were asked a question about whether the state should tax retirement income, and Rauner kind of clammed up. And that's what you saw here. I mean, he could have turned this around. He could have really used this as a way to kind of grab that crucial vote from independent moderate women in the Chicago suburbs, which is going to be a big voting block in November. And you saw Governor Pat Quinn capitalize on this. So maybe an hour later, I think he perhaps droned on too much talking about this for about 15 minutes afterwards, but he saw the advantage.
But the thing that occurs to me,
earlier.
I was going to say, we say, oh, Rauner wasn't prepared for this. I mean, goodness gracious, what kind of preparation do you need to be able to say some guy cold cocking a woman is reprehensible? I mean, maybe I'm old fashioned, but I was brought up to believe that a male never, ever strikes a female. And for him to say, "Well, I'm a part owner, and I want to be governor, so I'm not going to comment."
I think it's the nature of the campaign where you're frightened to say anything.
And this
goes back more than a year, because when he was here in August of last year, 2013, he was asked. He said, "I rode my motorcycle down here for Republican Day at the state fair." And so the natural question for state house reporters: did you wear a helmet? Should there be a helmet law? And he refused to answer. And I remember Bernie Schoenberg from the SJR was very persistent, but a bunch of people were trying to ask him again and again: should there be a helmet law? Should there be a helmet law? And he just refused to answer because he had not either poll tested it or thought about it, or he just did not want to answer off the cuff, whatever his gut instinct. I have to assume that he has a gut instinct on some of these things, but he's disciplined himself well enough to just say nothing in those cases.
is this fair game even for Rauner? Or talking about the media cycle, we've spent a lot of time on this program with that and how that affects politics. Is it a wise strategy in any way for a candidate to be really careful about what they say, particularly a first-time candidate, knowing that with, for example, the minimum wage, every comment is then cataloged forever and can be viewed as a flip-flop? Or
I would say this goes back to what I said initially. When you run for office, one would hope that you have certain things you believe in and that you have the courage to be able to tell the voters of Illinois, here's what I believe in, here's what I think ought to be done, and if you agree with me, vote for me, and if you don't, vote for somebody else. And we've gotten away from that. We've gotten to what can I say that my advisors tell me will get me the most votes, or what's some kind of a pablum answer that will avoid any controversy. And I think it's a disservice to the people.
And I know we only have about 2.5 minutes left, but if I can just make this point that I think that Rauner is very clearly running a media campaign. He has a lot of money at his disposal. He's now exceeded $11 million of his own money alone that he has put into his campaign. That number came out this week, I think. And it's all going to be TV. And so I guess the answer is, if he wins, then yeah, I guess it was a good strategy to say as little as possible and not offend people. But what concerns me as a reporter and as a voter is I want to know if somebody can think on their feet, and I kind of want to know how they think on their feet and what's going to happen when some unexpected event, there's a flood, a tornado, a financial crisis that we haven't anticipated, which I guess is by definition.
Or a prison riot.
Or a prison riot. Yeah, that's a classic state government example, isn't it? So how does the person respond to changing events like that? And we are just not getting that answer.
Well, and I want to make sure that we get to, it is not just Governor Pat Quinn, though, and Bruce Rauner in this race. Carrie Lester of the Associated Press has spent time this week covering the issue with Chad Grimm, the Libertarian candidate, who will, in fact, be on the ballot for governor. Carrie?
You know, I spent about an hour and a half with him earlier this week. We have a profile that's going to be running out on state lines early next week. And, you know, you talk about how scripted the two main party candidates can be sometimes in this race. And I will say, Mr. Grimm of Peoria describes his own position as quote unquote a little out there, it was refreshing just to hear him go on certain things. You know, he likes to explain himself, and his position, he's very realistic about his place in the race. He says he wants to draw about more than 5% of the vote, so it will be easier for Libertarian candidates by state law to get on the ballot going forward. He wants them to be treated more seriously. But Republicans really fought this effort. The State Board of Elections had ruled to allow Grimm on the ballot, but to knock off Green Party, Independent, and Constitution Party candidates. But Republicans feel that Grimm could take away some votes from Rauner. So they had challenged the State Board of Elections decision this week in Sangamon County Circuit Court, but a judge ultimately decided to side with the State Board of Elections.
And thank you, Carrie Lester of the Associated Press. That is our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Carrie as well to our other panelists. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org or find it on iTunes by searching for State Week in Review. The production assistance for our program today was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.